All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Monday, everybody. I hope you all had an amazing weekend. Today is September 22nd, 2025. And what have I been saying? What have I been saying for weeks? I say it almost every show. I'm channeling the Starks. I say, winter is coming. Be careful on leverage if you're playing in crypto. I say it almost every day. Maybe not every day. Every now and then I misses it. But most days I say it. And why do I say it? Because of exactly what happened last night. There was a sudden and brutal deleveraging in some of your favorite shitcoins or altcoins. We had Dogecoin, Solana, and Ethereum were all brutally sold off last night. It happened between midnight and 3 a.m. Eastern time. We had a total of about $1.7 billion in long positions were just abruptly liquidated. Almost $4 trillion worth of crypto market cap went up in smoke last night. Bitcoin is down as well, not as much. Nothing in cryptocurrency is being spared this morning. Look, guys, there is a very good chance that the top is already in for this cycle. We are now about 74 weeks since the last Bitcoin halving. Typically 75 to 77 weeks after the halving, something bad happens. There is an ever-growing chorus of people in the crypto sphere who says this time is different, that there will not be a crypto winter this time. Maybe they're right, and it's not like people have ever been like catastrophically wrong by saying this time is different before. Let's overlook that. We spent a lot of time on my Patreon Zoom call on Friday exploring possible reasons why this time could be different. Maybe it is. It probably isn't, guys. I mean, look what happened last night. Look how abruptly money just went up in smoke. And I have to tell you guys, look, if you're in crypto, you've done really well for the last 2 years. Congratulations. Be careful. Avoid leverage. They will wipe you out in a second. And that's what happened last night. To the Dogers, the Solaners, and the Ethers. Meanwhile, gold and silver continues to shine. The metals are up once again. I got to send a shout out to my friend Bob Coleman at Profits Plus ID on Twitter. I had Bob on the channel middle of last week to talk about gold and silver, and he hypothesized that we could be looking at a gamma squeeze in silver, and that's pretty much what we got on Friday. We had a big run in silver. Silver outperforming gold again this morning. The gold to silver ratio is breaking down below that threshold that Bob called out in one of his tweets. It is looking good in the metal space. So what's going on here, guys? Look, real yields, negative real yields are here to stay. The interest rate that bonds pay you, adjusted for inflation, is pretty much negative. If it's not negative, it's nothing. And what happens when stocks start to sell off? What happens when crypto dumps overnight? What happens when commercial real estate and housing are dumping? What happens when there's nowhere to hide your money and bonds are yielding negative? Where does all that money go to hide at the same time? It goes to gold and silver. And that's what the investors can pick out here. You've had stories over the last few days. You've had Ray Dalio saying 10% gold allocation. You've had Jeff Gundlach saying 25% gold allocation. Holy crap. Jeff Gundlach, the bond king, saying 25% gold. Take a minute and just like absorb what that really means for the bond market and for metals. Doing really good this morning. So as always, I like the shiny. We've also got some interesting stories going on in D.C. this morning. First thing, Friday afternoon, the news broke that President Trump was going to start charging $100,000 for an H-1B visa. And that was the subject of much consternation and debate over the weekend in FinTwit. Half of the country, mostly the people with TDS, are saying, oh, my God, my big tech companies, what's going to happen if they can't outsource American jobs? Or I guess it would be insourcing because they're laying off Americans, firing them, saying, oh, we can't afford to pay you. And then they're going to the government and saying, we simply must have this guy who we're bringing over from freaking Bangladesh because he'll work for 85 cents on the dollar. And President Trump is saying, you know what, if you're going to do that, we're going to charge you $100,000. So do you really need that guy, or are you just trying to arbitrage cheap labor to replace Americans? A lot of debate on that subject. Let's talk about that one today as well. Shout out to Amanda Goodall, the job chick on X, who has been all over the subject of H-1B visas. And I suspect it is her coverage of this topic that reached the ears of people like J.D. Vance and eventually to President Trump and resulted in that. What else we got going on this morning? Oracle's going to run TikTok. Okay, Larry Ellison's going to have to cancel one of his next facelifts because he is a busy guy. He's buying media companies. He's buying TikTok. He's cutting $300 billion deals with OpenAI that they can't possibly pay for, but I digress. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, this is an interesting one. They have decided they are going to reschedule, without explanation, their 2024 Consumer Expenditures Annual Survey, their annual report. Now, the Consumer Expenditures Report, that is the input that determines the weights in CPI. What is going on here? Why are they delaying the report that adjusts the weighting to CPI? I have an idea what they might be doing. It's kind of sleazy. We'll talk about that one as well. The Department of Agriculture has decided they're going to cancel their 2025 food security survey. I guess if we don't report it, then it ain't happening, right? Look, this survey, it's been going on since the 1990s. You could argue it's redundant. We have a SNAP program. Can't we just look at the SNAP program and say this many people are on food stamps, therefore this many people are hungry? Do we need to spend money on another survey? The government is broke, you may have heard. Then again, at the same time, like, if of all the things we're going to cut, we're not going to cut corporate welfare. We're not going to cut paying people to do nothing. No, we're going to cut the reporting on hungry people. Is that really the best place to cut? I don't know. Maybe not. But again, you know, if we don't report it, it's just not happening. And why are we sitting here? Why are we even talking about this? Farmers are supposedly like being killed right now because they're looking at really good harvests and the Chinese aren't buying our food. If we've got so much freaking food in this country that the farmers can't afford to grow anymore because the supply is so high, then how do we even have freaking hungry people to begin with? Is the food just all in the wrong place? Are we growing the wrong shit? I don't know. Something's off there. Something's got to be off there. Also, we got, what else we got going on? Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Meta. He's out there admitting that AI is a bubble as well over the weekend. That's fun. That's now you can add him to Sam Altman and everybody else. Look, pretty much the whole world is now in agreement, except for maybe Martin Shkreli and two other douchebags, that the AI is a freaking bubble. I think we all are willing to admit it. Now, why are we all still pretending like it isn't happening? Why is OpenAI still getting like gajillion dollar valuations? Why has Mag7 companies not started to correct when their CEOs are telling their investors that their stocks are in a bubble? When is this AI bubble going to pop? I don't know. It feels like it's getting close. Maybe it's not today. But when the CEO of one of the biggest AI bubble companies says AI is a bubble, and then another CEO of one of the biggest AI bubble companies says AI is a bubble, you'd think people would pay attention to that. But you know what? I'm just a Twitter rando. What do I know? I was only two years ahead of everybody on this one. MacroEdge, by the way, out with a really good chart of electricity prices. That as well spells trouble for the AI bubble. Shout out to my friends at MacroEdge. And as always, in every show, we are going to try to devote a little bit of time to alternative assets and how they're coming to your 401k. And today we have got to talk about Ivy Intermediate Holdings. You're probably saying, who? Oh, wait till you hear who. These people, these are some of the worst people on the freaking planet. And that is who's coming for your 401k. Stick around to the end of the show for that one, guys. We got a lot to talk about. How about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button for the algorithm and that subscribe button. I'm sure M&J is in the comments right now beating that drum. Hit the like button, all that good stuff. So come on back tomorrow, you new guys, and have your coffee with the melon heads as well. Right now, the S&P 500 is about a quarter of a percent lower, off by about 15 points this morning. We've also got the Dow is down about 0.4%, 192 points in the red, now 171, a little bit of a bump there. The NASDAQ is down about 0.22%, 53 points in the red. So we got stocks pretty much down across the board this morning, although not that much, still hovering around all-time highs. We've got the dollar is weakening this morning as well, 97.41 on the Dixie. That's down by about 22 basis points. That is going to be good for your gold prices this morning. Looking over at the bond market, we have got yields are finally coming down. 3 days after the Fed lowered interest rates are finally red. They did nothing but go up since those rate cuts. Right now, the 30-year yield is unchanged at 4.756. The 10 years down about a point and a half at 4.126. The 2 year is at 3.569. That's off by a point and change. And the 1 month is at 4.104, off by half a point this morning. Looking over at the commodities board, look at my shinies. They are doing so wonderful this morning. Spot gold, $3,721 for spot gold. That's up by $36.72, 1% higher this morning. Those December gold futures are looking even better, up $49 at $37.54. They went as high as $37.62 overnight. Gold is looking real good here, and silver is looking even better. Spot silver, $43.47, up about 40 cents or 0.91%. We hit a high overnight of $43.80. And then look at that front month silver futures contract there, $43.76. That's up by about 82 cents or almost 2% higher. And we hit a high of $44.11 overnight. $44 silver on the COMEX. Who had that one on their 2020s bingo? I did. A lot of us did. Shout out to my stackers out there. I like the shiny. Copper is down about 0.25% this morning. Platinum is pretty much unchanged here. Palladium is up by another 3% this morning. And crude oil is down by about 1%, $61.73 for November WTI futures. That's off by about 68 cents this morning. One thing I want to point out, we were talking about the shiny, guys. I want to show you the gold to silver ratio. This is the number of ounces of silver it takes to make the value of 1 ounce of gold. And we are down here at 85.6 right now. And I just want to point to this little line down here. That's a line that Bob Coleman drew around 86, talking about that support that was holding for a couple of weeks here. The gold to silver ratio hit an obscenely high level of 105 earlier this year back in April. Ever since then, silver has outperformed gold. Even though gold has continued to rip higher and make new all-time highs day in and day out, silver is still years behind. It still hasn't even made a new all-time high. Gold has been doing that on a daily basis for like a year now. But silver still hasn't taken out its high from 1980, which means silver's got a lot of catching up to do. And look, guys, if we zoom way out here, we can see the gold to silver ratio. Like if we go back years, it has spent a lot of time, a hell of a lot lower. These are daily candles, by the way. You know, we could be going to around 75, 65 on the gold to silver ratio, which means there is a lot of room for metals to run here. And meanwhile, we got to talk about Bitcoin. We're back on daily candles here. You can see Bitcoin had a bad night here, broke down below the 50-day moving average, off by about $2,200, $113,013 for Bitcoin here. And believe it or not, Bitcoin down 2% is actually doing better than most of the cryptosphere. So what happened overnight? We got this one in Decrypt.com. Dogecoin, Solana, and Ethereum plunge as crypto liquidations near $1.7 billion. Crypto markets saw another sharp retreat as liquidations totaled nearly $1.7 billion in the past day, with Dogecoin, Solana, and Ethereum leading losses among the top 10 cryptocurrencies by market cap. The price of Bitcoin dropped by 2.3% on the day, posting smaller losses than those of Ethereum and other major altcoins as immediate price pressure piled on alternative assets. Dogecoin was the hardest hit, dropping by 9.9% on the day, followed by Solana off by 6.9% and Ethereum down 6.2%, according to data from CoinGecko. The broader market also declined, with CoinGecko data showing total crypto market cap at about $3.98 trillion after a 3.7% daily drop. The $1.7 billion in liquidations reflects an aggressive flush of leverage from the system, said Dan Daddy Bayo, research and strategy lead at Unstoppable Wallet at Total Decrypt. By the way, guys, earlier in the show, I mentioned $4 trillion in market cap had gone up in smoke. That is incorrect. The market cap is now below $4 trillion for crypto. That was a mistake on my part. Apologies for that. Some 95% of positions wiped out were longs, which shows this wasn't a short squeeze. It was overexposed bulls getting caught, he said. Once ETH and Doge rolled over, cascading margin calls forced positions to close, with more than $1 billion liquidated in just 1 hour at the peak. And I know none of the melon heads were caught up in that liquidation and those longs getting margin called, because every day we warn about not going out on leverage in crypto when we're this close to crypto winter, right? Surely none of my guys got caught up in this nonsense last night. Look at what happened. This is Dogecoin. All these, by the way, are going to be shown as priced on Coinbase. And these are looking at minute candles here. We had a big sell-off that started, it looks like right around 10 p.m. Eastern time last night. And then there was another big sudden liquidation that we saw around 2 a.m. And what you're looking at here, guys, these are the prices dropping 2 or 3% in the span of a minute is what happened during these big liquidations. That is people with big levered long bets getting margin called, and they're just selling whatever they can to raise the capital or just getting outright liquidated. They're not even given the option. The exchange is just selling their stuff. Big margin calls. Now, we are off the lows here, but still Dogecoin hit the hardest, down 7.17% here at 24 cents. Solana had the same thing, big, brutal sell-off around 2 a.m. Solana is down 5.5% at $223. And Ethereum, the same thing. We had a smaller liquidation right there around 10 p.m. last night. Then another big one at 2 a.m., $4,201 for Ethereum. That's off by about $250 or 5.5%. As always, guys, I got to warn you again, be careful on leverage. Crypto winter is right around the corner. Meanwhile, we got this one on Friday afternoon. Trump's $100,000 visa targets a $280 billion India success story. And you know, I got to tell you right away, the financial press, because they're all run by Keynesians who just love to outsource labor, love to import labor, love to suppress wages while printing money because it makes them rich. So right away, all the financial press is going to go to the sob story of, oh, these poor H-1B visa holders. I don't see anybody writing about what happens to Americans who get laid off and replaced by H-1B visa holders. They never warrant the sob story that begins a Bloomberg article. Worth pointing that out here. You know, they're sitting here talking about, oh, Donald Trump's move to curtail H-1B visas threatens to rewrite the rules for one of India's biggest business success stories, a decades-old model that's grown into a $280 billion industry and underpins much of the technology behind the world's largest corporations. The U.S. president's order on Friday, which requires a $100,000 fee for H-1B visa applicants, will force a rethink at Indian outsourcers led by Tata Consultancy and Infosys, who used the program to deploy tens of thousands of engineers across American clients from Citigroup to Walmart. The two Indian software exporters' shares slid more than 3% on Monday. The abrupt move, a response in part to accusations of abuse, forces Prime Minister Narendra Modi to once again deal with the fallout from America First policies. Companies from TCS to Wipro have been hailed as a touchstone of Indian technological achievement, helping create high-skilled jobs for the world's most populous economy at the expense of American tech workers since the idea of outsourced information technology gained currency around the 1990s. Trump's move deals a blow to some of India's most valuable companies just as they grapple with IT cutbacks and heightened geopolitical uncertainty. And I want to send a shout-out to Amanda Goodall on X, by the way. She has been all over this topic this year. I've seen a lot of stuff from her, and I know that her work has reached the ears of people like Vance and Trump. And she's talking about this here over the weekend. Microsoft cut 40% of U.S. engineering roles while adding overseas headcount. Amazon shrank corporate roles while inflating AI jobs on paper. Apple hides cuts behind vendors like Jamf. It's not efficiency. It's labor arbitrage. Investors see cleaner margins, i.e. higher earnings. Workers see vanishing jobs, i.e. American workers see vanishing jobs, two sides of the same trade. Thank you, Amanda, for your work on this subject. Also in the news this morning, TikTok's algorithm to be secured by Oracle in a Trump-backed deal. Look, I don't know if this is a deal or one of those deal, not a deal things. The TikTok deadline was extended by another 90 days last week, but it looks like Oracle's going to be taking this thing over. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but let's see. Data from U.S. users will be stored in a secure cloud managed by Oracle with controls established to keep out foreign adversaries, including China, the official said. Beijing-based ByteDance would not have access to information on TikTok's U.S. subscribers, nor would it have any control over the algorithm in the U.S. Those are the big sticking points that have caused the Trump administration to go after TikTok to begin with. So it looks like Oracle is going to be doing that while also cutting fantasy deals with OpenAI. And now we got to talk about this because there's been a lot of a lot of debate, a lot of energy around what's going on at the BLS. And remember, guys, President Trump just fired the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics a few weeks ago, replaced her with EJ Antoni. A lot of people were worried that they were going to manipulate the inflation statistics to make the president look better. And then we got this one over the weekend. BLS reschedules consumer spending report without explanation. The Bureau of Labor Statistics is postponing its annual spending report. The announcement on Friday, presented without explanation, follows President Trump's recent firing of the Bureau's head. The 2024 Consumer Expenditures Annual Data release, scheduled on September 23rd, 2025, will be rescheduled to a later date, the Bureau's announcement said. We will update users when more information is available. Trump fired BLS Commissioner Eric McIntyre for last month, claiming that her politics played a role in the agency's weak monthly jobs report released the same day. The BLS had also announced a revision to jobs data for the year ended March that was the largest revision in more than two decades, at 911,000 jobs, less than initial estimates. In other words, the BLS, they really sucked at their job. So there was a defensible case for firing Erica McIntyre. For the data her organization was putting out was garbage. Now, look, this BLS survey that they're talking about here, though, the consumer spending report, this is what's used to determine the weight of each category in the consumer price index. And I have a theory here, guys. If you don't mind, pardon me for speculating a little bit. There is a way for EJ Antoni and the Bureau of Labor Statistics to make inflation go down on paper, and that is owner's equivalent rent. I have been railing against owner's equivalent rent for years on this channel. It is a BS statistic. And for many years, like in 2021, 22, and 23, owner's equivalent rent was lagging by so much that it made inflation look much lower than it really was. It's the single heaviest weighting in the entire CPI math. Now, right now, rents, asking rents across the country are actually in decline because people aren't paying their rent. They can't afford it. They can't afford higher rents. But owner's equivalent rent is still showing big year-over-year growth in shelter inflation. More than half of the increases in CPI for the last few months have been because of owner's equivalent rent. And so what the BLS could be doing here, and again, I'm theorizing here, they could be going after owner's equivalent rent as a way to lower CPI. And actually, it's defensible, but even that is still a lie because they'd be fixing an error that's making inflation look higher than it really is while leaving all of the other errors that make inflation look lower than it really is. For example, healthcare, according to the CPI, health insurance premiums have gone down by like 30% over the last year, which we all know is BS. It clearly is not the truth. I suspect what they're doing is they're going after owner's equivalent rent in order to lower CPI so that inflation doesn't spike when tariffs inevitably hit the consumer. I don't know that for sure, but they definitely rescheduled that report and they didn't offer any explanation. I think that's what they might be doing. By the way, speaking of messing with the data, Trump administration cancels annual hunger survey as well. It's another one that they're not going to do. By the way, why are they showing, that's Chef Boyardee. I thought that was soda cans for a second. The Trump administration is canceling an annual government effort to gather data on how many Americans struggle to get enough food. The data, which is collected each December and analyzed by the U.S. Agriculture Department, measures food insecurity across states and demographic groups. The data has been collected every year since the mid-1990s and is widely used by federal, state, and local policymakers to make funding decisions for food assistance programs and to evaluate how well those programs work. The decision to discontinue the survey for 2025 was announced in meetings with the USDA employees this past week by an administrator for the Economic Research Service, an arm of the Agriculture Department, according to people present at the meetings. Employers were told that the survey wouldn't be funded this year by the USDA, according to people who attended the meetings. On Saturday, the USDA confirmed that it was canceling the survey. So again, if we just don't report it, it's not happening, right? Kind of like that Chinese youth unemployment. If we just don't report the numbers, then the numbers don't exist, right? That's one argument. The other argument is that this survey is redundant. We already have food stamp programs. We have ample data available to show where the food security is. Why are we spending money on an extra survey? We only started doing this in the mid-1990s, coincidentally right about the time budget deficits started exploding higher. We managed to get by without it before the 1990s. Maybe we can get by without it now. Either way, the government's got to cut spending. It's got to come from somewhere. No matter where you cut the spending, it's going to hurt somebody. Let's not pretend like we can solve this problem without everybody feeling some amount of austerity. Just not sure this is the right one, though. I don't know. I could be wrong about that. All right. Let's talk about this one. It's not just Sam Altman warning about an AI bubble. Now Mark Zuckerberg says a collapse is definitely a possibility. Say what now? A collapse is definitely a possibility? That can't be right. That's just something that pure all Twitter randos say. Deutsche Bank called it a summer AI turned ugly for weeks with every new bit of evidence that corporations were failing at AI adoption. Fears of an AI bubble have intensified. Fueled by the realization of just how top-heavy the S&P 500 has grown, along with warnings from top industry leaders. An August study from MIT found that 95% of AI pilot programs fail to deliver a return on investment. Say what now? The biggest thing, the new fire, 95% of their programs fail to deliver a return on investment. Okay. Despite over $40 billion being poured into the space, just prior to MIT's report, OpenAI CEO Sam Altman rang AI bubble alarm bells, expressing concern over the overvaluation of some AI startups and the intensity of investor enthusiasm. These trends have even caught the attention of Fed Chair Jerome Powell, who noted that the U.S. was witnessing unusually large amounts of economic activity in building out AI capabilities. Mark Zuckerberg has some similar thoughts. The Meta CEO acknowledged that the rapid development of and surging investments in AI stands to form a bubble potentially outpacing practical productivity and returns and risking a market crash. But Zuckerberg insists that the risk of overinvestment is preferable to the alternative being late to what he sees as an era-defining technological transformation. So better to waste trillions of other people's money on reckless data center build-out. Why? Because of FOMO. That's what he's saying. He's fearful of missing out on AI. That's why he's burning so much investor cash. There are compelling arguments for why AI could be an outlier, Zuckerberg hedged in an appearance on the Access podcast. And if the models keep on growing in capability year over year and demand keeps growing, then maybe there is no collapse. Wait a minute. How did we go from the greatest thing since sliced bread, the new fire, it's going to put us all out of work, to maybe there won't be a collapse? Well, wow, that is a very sudden about face in the rhetoric. Then Zuckerberg joined the Altman camp, saying that all capital expenditure bubbles, like the build out of AI infrastructure seen largely in the form of data centers, tend to end in similar ways. But I do think there's definitely a possibility, at least empirically, based on past large infrastructure build outs and how they led to bubbles, that something like that would happen here, Zuckerberg said. Well, guys, I've been trying to warn you for 2 years about this. It is now too late. Trillions of dollars has already gone up in smoke. Most of that money will come out of people's 401ks. Those people just don't realize it's already happened to them. I tried. What can I tell you? I tried to warn people. They didn't want to hear it. By the way, check out this one. Speaking of inflation statistics going away and the AI bubble, my friends over at MacroEdge put this chart out over the weekend. This is the consumer price index for electricity going back to 1980. Look at what electricity has done, increasing almost 5x since 1980. In particular, look at what it has done since the onset of the AI bubble. And as I mentioned at Twitter over the weekend, there are two things shown in this chart. This is poor people getting poorer, and this is unprofitable data centers getting unprofitabler. If the data centers were already losing money and their electricity prices double, well, Are they making money off of it? No, they're losing even more money now. That's what this is showing. And of course, poor people, utility bills makes up a disproportionately high percentage of their income, which means they are going to suffer the most from this one. Shout out to MacroEdge. But hey, at least we got chatbots and strawberry GIF images. All right. Now, every show I try to warn you guys about this bubble in private assets. And this is a big one. Shout out to RK Consultants on X, who posted this one over the weekend. This is a bankruptcy filing alert. Ivy Intermediate Holdings filed Chapter 11 in the North District of Texas on Friday. And when I first saw this, I was like, who is this? Ivy Intermediate Holdings. I've never heard of these guys. Who cares? And then I see down here assets of $1 to $10 billion in liabilities. Whoa, that is a big one. $1 to $10 billion in liabilities for 1 to 49 creditors. They're also listing liabilities of $1 to $10 billion. And so, okay, who is this outfit, this Ivy Intermediate Holdings? Right away, I knew this has to have something to do with private equity. And of course, I was not disappointed. Ivy Intermediate Holdings is the parent company of Prospect Medical Group. Prospect Medical Group, much like their idiot cousin Steward Healthcare, was a private equity firm that was going around the country buying hospitals, and they would convince local governments to let them buy nonprofit hospitals, claiming, oh, we're going to invest millions of dollars in these hospitals, we're going to improve the facilities, we're going to better serve the community, and we're going to lower healthcare costs. And of course, all the local municipal governments were like, oh, that sounds just great. Look at all the buzzwords in that sentence, approved. And as soon as Prospect Medical bought the hospitals, what did they do? They borrowed hundreds of millions of dollars against the assets of those hospitals. They sold the buildings to real estate investment trusts in sale leaseback agreements, which burdened those hospitals with expensive rent payments that they couldn't afford, leading to these hospitals going bankrupt, the services going down the drain, in some cases, patients getting killed because of substandard care. And then the people at Prospect Medical and Ivy Intermediate Holdings, instead of making improvements and capital investments in those projects, all the debt that they borrowed, they paid themselves hundreds of millions of dollars in special dividends. These people are freaking locusts. They go from town to town, strip mining everything they can, bankrupting everything they touch, and then they move on to greener pastures. And this is the kind of crap that they're trying to put in your 401k, in your IRA. The debt from companies like this, because they, the banks, they, the private equity firms, they, the alternative asset managers, they need to get that shit off their books before this happens again. And they're looking at your retirement account with a twinkle in their eye. This is the kind of crap that they're trying to do. And I've warned this. I know this is sounding repetitive, guys. I do this every show, but I really am so worried about this. We're not going to get price discovery, just like in The Big Short. They won't tell us what this garbage is really worth until after they sell it to us. So know what you're holding, guys. And I just want to say thank you very much to Steve Woitis for supporting the channel. Thank you, Steve, for the super chat. He says, I don't subscribe to market timing, but do you think we may have an ugly October? Wrong guy to ask here, Steve. I also am a shit market timer. All I can tell you is the conditions, all right? Crypto, a big rapid sell-off in crypto could spread to tech stocks. There is a lot of overlap between cryptocurrency and the AI bubble. So the fact that we're so close to crypto winter, I could see that happening, all right? I can't say it's going to that trigger. Like, what suddenly triggered the wave of liquidations last night? I don't know what that first little snowball was, but I can tell you once it got rolling, it turned into a great big avalanche, didn't it? We very well could see that in October. But again, I'm amazed this bubble has gone on as long as it has, Steve. If you would have asked me 2 years ago, I'd tell you no freaking way we last until the end of 2025. So when it comes to market timing, I'm probably the wrong guy to ask here. Thank you very much, Steve. And I'll just leave you with this. Never underestimate how freaking sleazy they are. That's one thing I've learned to do. They will print money, they'll lie, they'll cheat, they'll do it right to your face, gaslight you out in the open. Never underestimate the sleaze of the people who are trying to perpetuate this bubble. Thank you, Steve, for supporting the channel. John, Mr. Clippy, thank you, sir, says, have you traded stock options? Thoughts on it? I have traded options before. I have done very well on some options trades, and I have done very poorly on some options trades. And I can tell you, if you are thinking about getting into options, plan on losing every penny of your first 10 trades, because that's probably what's going to happen. People who get into option trades who don't know what they're doing, and nobody knows what they're doing the first time they do something, all right, except that. People who get into these things not knowing what they're doing, they end up being sources of excellent liquidity for other people. They end up paying fat fees to the market makers, and they tend to lose everything in their first few trades. Options have a lot of risk. Know what you're getting into. And again, trade small at the start, because I guarantee you your first few trades, you're probably going to get wiped out. Just usually what happens. That's my general opinion on options, John. Thank you very much, sir, for supporting the channel. T.A. Chapman says, hit the like button. Have a great weekend, Jack. Thank you so much, T.A. Chapman, for the algo love there and for being a Melonhead member for 15 months. By the way, reminder, guys, to all you Melonhead members, you get one free super chat a month like T.A. Chapman just used. Use that, and I will read and respond to your questions on the air. Break My Wallet Motorsports. I freaking love this company. Oklo and SMR jumped 25% last week. What gives? I can't speak to SMR. I think SMR, that's New Scale Technologies. They are pretty far along. They may actually, there was an article that said small modular reactors could be like a $5 trillion industry by next year or by 2028. One of these running companies via press release stories, and all of the SMR companies rallied big on that. I can tell you there have been some very, I don't know if you want to call them breakthroughs, but there has been movement on the regulatory front to streamline the approval process for SMRs, but they still haven't made the big technology or the big cultural changes at the NRC that are needed for widespread deployment of small modular reactors to power the grid. So I still think SMRs are years away, even though we're closer than we were a few months ago. And be very careful. Companies like Oklo, I think they are so sleazy. Oklo is a pre-revenue company that's being valued at $20 billion. They run that company via press release. They're making promises that they know they can't deliver on. And any nuke who is worth his salt lives by the principles of under-promise and over-deliver. Oklo does the opposite. Be careful with those people. They make my skin crawl. Thank you very much. Break My Wallet Motorsport. And by the way, I've been warning about Oklo. The company's rallied like 5X since I first said anything about Oklo. So, I mean, Oklo is basically an AI company at this point. The SMR companies will go the way of the AI bubble. And Clippy is back. He says, thanks, Jack. You are most welcome, John. Thanks again, sir. It looks like you're trying to leave a cheap super chat. Want some help? Sorry, having Clippy flashbacks. Thanks a lot, John, for supporting the channel. Chris Bott says, Leap options are your friends. Never mess with Leap options. Guys, I'm just not that good of a trader. I just want to be upfront with that. I'm more of a macro guy than anything else. So when it comes to complex trades like that, probably the wrong guy to ask. There are other people out there that are good at this that offer the services and teach people how to do it. I would throw the one little asterisk in there. Anybody who's really that good at it wouldn't be teaching courses. They'd be out doing it, making billions of dollars. So that's, you know, the expression, those who can't do teach, applies to finance and macro as well. Just keep that in mind. Thank you very much, Chris Bott. I appreciate the super chat and the support of the channel. Guys, be careful on leverage. Let's bring that back up again. Be careful on leverage. That applies to crypto, to stocks, to everything. Leverage in the system right now is higher than it has ever been by a huge margin, not just crypto, the S&P 500, the Mag 7 stocks, margin debt at all-time highs. For every leveraging, there is an equal and opposite deleveraging, and we got a little taste of that in crypto last night, and it sucked for a lot of people. Glendaler, thank you, Glendaler, for supporting the channel. He says, what will be straw that breaks economy? Car debt. I don't know if car debt is going to be the straw that breaks the economy. We did have that big bankruptcy in Tricolor a few weeks ago. By the way, I have my buddy Tommy. We're going to talk later today. We'll probably air that one tomorrow or the day after. We're going to talk about the car market again. My friend Tom from Car Concierge Plus is coming on the channel to talk about that. Will that be what pops it? It's hard to say what pops it. I mean, take your pick. It could be student loan debt. It could be buy now, pay later. It could be commercial real estate. It could be crypto. It could be the AI bubble. It could be the housing market. Could be the private equity bubble, the private credit bubble. Could be the Chinese housing market. Could be the crackdown on immigration causing spiraling labor costs. Could be banks failing because farmers are going out of business because the Chinese aren't buying soybeans. There is no shortage of risks in the economy right now, and yet everything is at all-time highs. Just be careful, guys. What will be the straw? Any of those straws could be the one that breaks the camel's back. Thank you, Glendaler. Break My Wallet Motorsports is back again, says, just supporting the king of tinfoil hats. Well, then allow me to don my crown while we're at it. Thank you very much, Break My Wallet Motorsports, for being a swell guy, for having an awesome name, and for supporting the channel. I appreciate that very much. SA has been a Millenhead for 16 months. He says, thanks for the show. You are so welcome, SA. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate the support of the channel and the good vibes. Nashville Pasta Man, what's going on, brother? He says, straw, compressed straw, $15.75 at Lowe's. Up 300% for compressed straw. Why are you buying compressed straw at Lowe's, Pasta Man? There's got to be a farm supply depot somewhere near you that sells that stuff a lot cheaper than that. That being said, straw, I mean, it's just grass. Why is that up so much? I don't know. You're buying Halloween decorations, aren't you? Tell me you're buying Halloween decorations without actually telling me, unless, I don't know. I don't think Pasta Man has any livestock that I know of. But there's cheaper places to get straw than that. Lowe's is just price gouging because it's the season. Seasonal stuff. They're probably bringing out the giant inflatable Grim Reapers at Lowe's right about now. Thank you very much, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget all that algorithmic, wonderful stuff like the like button and the subscribe button for you guys. Also, thank you guys so much for the super chats for supporting the channel. You guys rock, as well as you magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon and YouTube. Thank you guys for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys. Everybody, till next time. Live small and dream big.